Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Our theme continues then today, talking about our response to injustice and inequality. And Pastor, I must say that we've been having a fantastic conversation about this for the rest of this week. Now it is Wednesday, third day we're talking about this, and it's just only getting better. Now, on our talk on inequality and injustice, today we're going to be talking about the thin line between legality and morality, and figure out where the church, or at least the individual Christian, should stand on some complicated aspects of this conversation. Now, there are some beliefs, Pastor, held within the church, often based on the Bible, that may be considered unjust. You know, example, no ordination of women pastors. Now, the church's stance on homosexuality is one of them. Now, how does the law view the church's position on these kinds of topics? Mfundisi.
All right. Thank you. Now, when you look at the Synod in the church, in 2015, they reaffirmed their stance that the church does not officially support the ordination of women as pastors, following the proposal that, you know, each division should decide for themselves. So we have it. And then they had a committee that was set up to actually investigate the matter, looking at the Bible and the reasons that are given in the Bible. And they had that debate, and there was the vote. So you have that. And then on homosexuality, the Synod in the church holds the official position that homosexual practices are inconsistent with Bible teachings. The church does not condemn homosexual tendencies, but the practice itself, because it has to do with, you know, how the makeup and all those things, the biological makeup and hormones and stuff like that. So when you look at this two issues, I think maybe we may have to deal with them differently, but nonetheless, Matthew chapter 22 verse 21, we see a principle there. The principle that we see there is this, that, you know, when they brought a coin to Christ saying that should we pay taxes to Caesar or not, he asked them, so whose face or image and the subscription is on the, or superscription is on the coin? They said it's Caesar's. He said, okay, well, give to Caesar the things that belong to him, and yep, give to God the things that belong to God. Mm-hmm. So here we see a clear separation of what you call statecraft and churchcraft.
Okay.
Now, the church has autonomy on issues that pertain to doctrine and faith. Now, on issues of things like, you know, no ordination of women, issues like not accepting those who are engaged in homosexual activity in, you know, the fellowship of the church, this has something to do with the faith and beliefs of the church, of which the church has total autonomy separated from the influence of the state. Now, that has to be clear. So we will see that the church has some point to operate differently from the state, simply because the state is not a religious institution, but the church is a religious institution. So some of the things that are not necessarily crimes, I mean, if I put it that way, that are necessarily crimes, but are forbidden by the Bible, the church has to make sure that they keep those things, and the church has to make sure that they uphold those things, because the church is a religious institution.
It does seem, though, that from Scripture, it was a crime, because one who practices homosexuality, it would say they must be stoned to death, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So I think it treated that as a crime, as it were, not so?
Yes. When you look at the time when that was given, I mean, besides homosexuality, there was also the issue of breaking the Sabbath, for which people were stoned.
Exactly.
The issue of adultery, of which people were stoned. Mm. But you don't do that today. Why? Because of what you call a change of governance. The system of governance that operated in ancient Israel is different from what we have today. What they had back then was what they called a theocracy, in which the whole nation was a religious state, and the king was God. Mm. But when, you know, throughout time, basically Ezekiel 27 talks about this, that God will actually overturn the diadem or the crown. Mm-hmm. And you see that in the movement from the captivity of Judah by Babylon, and from Babylon you have Medo-Persia, you have Greece and Rome, until Christ comes. So right now we don't live in a time of a theocracy. That is why it is wrong for a government to make any religious laws forbidding or promoting any religion.
Yeah.
Because of that difference, we cannot now, you know, stone people for that. We cannot now kill people for homosexuality because we don't get the mandate from God.
Mm.
That mandate expired when Israel gave up its stance as a theocratic nation. And when God now took the gospel to the Gentiles through his apostle.
Yeah.
So now the church is not a nation, but it's found among nations.
Mm-hmm. So how do we then distinguish between legality and morality? How do you distinguish between the two?
Yeah, there is a thin line between them, as you said earlier on. And when you look at legality, it's basically the definition of legality is things that pertain to what is permitted or prohibited by law. It involves the system of rules and regulations that a society or government enforces to maintain order and justice. And the focus of legality basically is adherence to the law with consequences or penalties for violations. Mm. And then, you know, examples for legality are things like paying taxes, things like obeying traffic laws and, you know, abiding by contracts. That's what you call, you know, legality, you know, legal stuff. And then, of course, you have things like, you know, here in South Africa, I know that they don't have the capital punishment, but where I come from, we have capital punishment.
Mm-hmm.
A life for a life. It's in the legal system. But other countries, they don't do that, which you can see it's debatable. There's difference here and there as to how they carry out that. And then morality, it involves principles and values that define what is wrong or good, you know, right or wrong, good or evil. And these are based on philosophical and religious beliefs
mm-hmm.
about how individuals should behave.
Yeah.
So when you talk about morality, it is influenced by philosophical and religious beliefs
mm-hmm.
of which there must be a sacred book somewhere, whether it's the Bible or the Quran or whatever the case may be. And when you look at morality, it focuses on ethical conduct and personal integrity, you know, often guided by conscience, religious teachings or philosophical reasoning or a combination of all of them. And examples are such things like telling the truth, helping those in need and, you know, acting with honesty and compassion.
Mm.
Now, comparing these two, you will see that legality is concerned with what is permitted by law, whereas morality deals with personal or societal standards of right and wrong.
Mm.
And something may be illegal, but considered immoral by certain individuals or groups. For example, divorce is legal, but may be viewed as immoral in some cultures or some, you know, some corners or some beliefs, religious beliefs. And then conversely, you can have something that might be immoral, but illegal.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give an example. This is actually what happened in World War II during Nazi Germany. And there was an Adventist family that hid a Jewish boy during the time when the Jews were being massacred by Nazi Germany. They hid him in their house. And the police came. They said to them, they said to the lady actually, because her husband had been drafted into the army, was fighting a war somewhere.
Mm.
And they said, "Are you hiding a Jew in your house?" And she had a battle of the conscience. Should I say that I'm not hiding a Jew, or should I say I'm hiding a Jew? Because if I say I'm not hiding a Jew,
mm-hmm.
well, that is the case, I'm lying. And if I say yes, I'm hiding him, then I'm putting his life in danger.
Yeah, yeah.
So she said, "Look, you know what? You are free to come and search my house." They asked her the question over and over again. She opened the door and said, "Come in and search my house." She knew that she was hiding a Jew. She didn't answer the question. So you can see that there was this battle between what is legal and what is moral. And she chose to go with that which is moral. I mean, not everything that is legal is right. You know,
yeah.
There are some wicked laws that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
That actually you can see that this thing is immoral. So that is the difference.
Man, you know, in light of what you just said, there are countries where certain things are legalized, but they go against, you know, church doctrine or morality even. Now, mm-hmm. should those living in those lifestyles have the same rights and privileges to serve in the church, considering that we all remain sinners after all, really?
Now. This question is very interesting. And things like, let's take, for example, there are countries where homosexuality is criminalized.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you look at what crime is the infringement of someone else's civil rights. So when you look at homosexuality, to be fair and frank, it's not a crime. It is not a crime. It does not infringe anyone's civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
We have what we call self-determination, which of course is limited. It is limited to some extent, but we have that.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we have to choose what we want to do with ourselves and with you know, what we want to believe. And then when you talk about church, a church is a community that has standards, that has principles. And in order for me to become part of a church, part of that community, I have to make a vow to say that I will abide by the principles and standards of this community. And therefore, if I find myself having a lifestyle that is against the principles and standards of that community, then it means that I lied when I said that I'll abide by those standards in the first place. So the best thing for me to be free from persecution by the church members is to remove my membership from that community so that I can join a community that accepts my lifestyle.
Mm, mm.
So I think that is how we should deal with it. And then in a case whereby the state, for example, is persecuting people maybe for homosexuality,
mm-hmm.
what is the role of a Christian? What is the role of a church? We as a church should correct the state and say, look, you cannot treat these people as criminals. They have not infringed on anyone's civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
Although we as a church don't support the homosexual lifestyle, but we cannot sit back and say, well, let them burn, let them be murdered,
mm-hmm.
let them be killed, let them be imprisoned,
mm-hmm.
because that is a violation of human rights. A friend of mine is a pastor in Botswana. He said, a statement on human rights is basically a statement on religious beliefs. And religious liberty, or when you talk about liberty of conscience, it doesn't only apply to those within the church, even those without the church. We are called as a church, individuals, and also corporately as a church, as an organization, as an organ, to advocate for justice wherever, even if it is done without injustice, even if it is perpetrated outside the walls of the church,
mm-hmm.
even if you don't agree on doctrines, but you look at what are the basic rights of this person. We have what you call inalienable rights. These are rights that cannot be given up or taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Rights like pursuit of happiness, rights like liberty, mm-hmm. rights like life.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a church, we have to stand guard so that these are protected.
Yeah. Now, Pastor, before I let you go, the very last question to you. What about when those things may be illegal or perhaps even legal, but the wider society is against them and those people are persecuted for their sexual orientation, for example? Should Christians on individual basis now, not as a church, stand up for mm-hmm. those people? Because somebody may say, I know if I stand up, I'll also be suspected of the same. Or should an individual just stay out of it, since in any case it goes against church doctrine? People here may be also associated and killed in certain areas because they simply just defended them, but they're not actually homosexual. What should the members do, really?
We can take a leaf from how Christ responded to a similar question when he was going through Samaria. He was trying to preach with them, and the Samaritans didn't want him. They rejected him. John and James said, should we call fire from heaven to come and devour them? Christ said, no, guys, don't do that. Don't do that. I came to save life, not to destroy. So as Christians, I mean, of course, there is a way to go about it. We need to do a lot of educating as a church. We need to make our stance clear as far as morality is concerned and legality is concerned, which sometimes may seem to be at loggerheads, but we have to educate the communities where we are based as church members to show them that, look, there's a difference between morality and legality. There's a difference between my preferences and my convictions and someone else's. I should not and cannot impose my convictions on someone else, as long as what they are doing does not in any way affect my civil rights, then I should let them be. I think we have a long way of educating certain communities as individual members of the church on that issue.
Beautiful. Well, Pastor, I must thank you so much for your time and joining us this afternoon. Always, always a pleasure having you on board. Tomorrow, we will focus on the socioeconomic inequality among us as a Seventh-day Adventist. Thank you so much for this afternoon.
Thank you so much for the interview.
Blessings. Thanks.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.